It's The Amazing Show, featuring the amazing James Randi. For information on all things Randi, including the James Randi Educational Foundation and the Million Dollar Challenge, head to randi.org. Hello, everybody. This is Justin Robert Young. I'm here, of course, with James Randi. Say hello, Randi.
Hello, Randi.
This is The Amazing Show. Now, what I wanted to ask you about today was a friendship you had, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, we are right now recording this in the Isaac Asimov Library of the James Randi Educational Foundation here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Your friendship with the brilliant author and thinker Isaac Asimov. How did you guys first meet?
Well, I was living in Rumson, New Jersey, which that whole area there, Monmouth County, was just jam packed with science fiction writers. Now, Isaac wasn't living there at that time, but Lester Del Rey and George O. Smith, Highways in Hiding, I think, was one of his books. In any case, George O. Smith lived very, very close to me, and I got to know him almost right away, though I had known Lester Del Rey before that from radio programs. Lester lived in Red Bank, which is only a few miles down the road. So it was a hotbed of science fiction and fantasy writers.
Hmm.
John Dickinson Carr wasn't too far away, and Theodore Sturgeon. Arthur C. Clarke? No. I guess not at that time. And
now,
who else?
Now, what time period is this? Like,
the 60s, early 60s, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. In any case, Isaac was always visiting Lester Del Rey and old Fred Pohl, of course, and good old Fred Pohl. He lived in Red Bank as well, not far from Lester. So they had an organization called the Trapdoor Spiders. Now, that was based upon the Black Widow stories were stories that eventually developed in Isaac Asimov's science fiction magazine.
Yeah,
or mystery.
Yeah.
No, was it science fiction magazine or mystery magazine? I've forgotten. In any case, the Black Widow Spiders was what they called it when it was in a fictional mode.
Okay.
So the Trapdoor Spiders were based on the premise that with Trapdoor Spiders, apparently the female, after being fertilized, eats the male. And they sort of felt they were of that nature because they they could go out in the evening, and when they went home, their wives yelled at them and threw things and various things. That was a story I sort of got. But they wanted to be victims of female spiders, I guess. I don't know.
There we go. All right.
It's a sort of
some
story.
Sort of weird yes. science fiction writer victim
yes.
culture.
Yeah, they do things
sprung
like
up
that,
in New
I'm
Jersey
sure.
in the 60s.
So I was invited to join the Trapdoor Spiders, but I had to give a 5-minute speech validating my existence. I don't know what the reason for that was. But in any case, I did 2 minutes of it, and they just held up their hands and said, okay, that's enough. You're worthwhile. You can join. We had meetings regularly, and they were always a lot of fun, often at Lester's house or at George O. Smith's home. And one night, Isaac Asimov showed up, his usual charming self, and insisted on singing a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan, which he did very, very well. And I actually knew a part of the Mikado there, and when the time came in, I joined in, and his eyebrows shot up, and he immediately he fell in love with me, I think, immediately at that point.
There we go.
I wanted to give me his firstborn and all of his money and a few things like that, but I declined. I said, no, there should be other people more worthy than I.
Yeah, so no, you're Gilbert and Sullivan, man.
Yes.
That's a good thing to know.
But then Isaac was living in New York at that time, and I used to call him from time to time, and it was always an interesting experience. And when you called Isaac, he always answered the phone with, Asimov here. Now, that's reasonable enough.
Sure.
Very informative, brief,
yeah.
to the point, and you don't have any doubt about the meaning. But as he picked up the phone, you would literally, in the background here, there was a speedball, a Selectric typewriter.
Really?
He used an IBM speedball with the return springs strengthened by the IBM engineers, because he typed so fast.
So he would wear out regular springs.
It didn't it didn't return the ball fast enough.
Gotcha.
As fast as he typed, you see.
Wow.
And so they had the specially modified version of the Speedball typewriter. So you'd hear this terrible clackety noise in the background while he was talking to you, and it never stopped. Now, I suspected for quite some time, and perhaps rightly so, that maybe he had a recording going, because I had some Chinese friends in Chinatown at that time in New York, and when I lived in Greenwich Village, I was let in by Arthur Chu, a good friend of mine who became a marine biologist eventually. I was let in on a bit of a secret. His mother was so enamored of Chinese opera, she had a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And as soon as the phone would ring, she'd run over and switch on the tape recorder. And when it got up to speed, she'd answer the phone. So they would think that she was very culturally aware, and they'd hear the Chinese opera in the background. However, Arthur did a thing that she almost executed him for this, and I could hardly have blamed her. He put the tape on upside. It was full track, you see. He put it on upside down.
Oh, no.
And played it backwards. Now, Chinese opera is Taiyuang, yeah, all this kind of thing. You can't tell the difference. I couldn't tell the difference. Apparently, the mother could, though, because she reacted to it rather quickly. But he, not speaking the language or the flowery formal language that the opera was
done in.
Of
course, yeah. It was all Mandarin to him.
There you go. He figured he could get away with it, but not for very long.
No.
And he was banished to some terrible place like Albania or something. I don't know. But in any case.
Where Chinese opera goes.
There you go.
Unspoiled.
So Isaac had a very, very good voice. He was a very good singer of Gilbert and Sullivan. And he used to regale us every now and then at the meetings. And he always had interesting stories to tell, which he always preceded with, some of this is true, as if to warn us that some of it may not be.
Yeah.
And I suspect that it was about 40 to 60, and I won't tell you what the proportion was in my mind. But he was a fascinating man. Almost any subject interested him. And this business of answering the phone while typing, you could be talking to him about the life history of ants, and he'd be writing a book on heart surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so two totally different subjects. And he told us once when I asked him about this, he said, I just sort of get going on it. I've got a lot of sentences piled up in my head, and I just sit there and I type them while I'm talking, because they just sort of come out of me automatically. And he said, sometimes I look back and I wonder, well, why did I ever type that
kind of thing? This is bizarre.
But what was interesting about his typing technique was that he typed on fanfold paper.
Okay.
Now, we haven't seen this in quite some time. Fanfold paper is paper that zigzags. It comes up out of a stack, and he'd put it forward of his desk, so it came up across the desk into the typewriter and then back down onto the floor again.
Okay.
And the problem was that it's just serrated. It's just scored at the end of each page, so you can tear the pages apart. But they're not very obvious when you're sitting there typewriting, and you're doing double spacing, as manuscripts usually are done in double spacing. So he had his wife, Janet, poor dear Janet. She used to sit down on the floor with a stack of this fanfold paper and skew it over to one side. Now, I think you can probably understand what I'm saying now. Skew it over to one side so she could take a pink magic marker and run down the edge of the page near the bottom, about an inch from the bottom, so that when he was typing, he would spot this little pink mark.
That would
one
be
inch,
the end of the page.
Yeah, 1 inch before the end of the page, you see.
Wow.
So he would just automatically advance the carriage, go blup, blup, a few times to get onto the next page. But he wouldn't number the pages, because she'd have to sit down with a pen afterwards and number the pages in sequence before she tore them up into singles and then send them off to the publisher. Interesting thing, too, he told me one time, he said, I've never had a really good idea that I didn't sit down and write out immediately. So that means the cupboards full of paper that still remain with Janet Asimov are Isaac's stuff that he never got published, or he never tried to get published.
Yeah.
Just his thoughts and his observations, and probably there are entire books there for all we know.
Just probably millions of those random sentences.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
Now, I'm very curious because I know a lot of people, especially in today's, you know, computer culture, you call somebody on the phone, they're doing something on the computer, and you can tell the difference between when they're not typing and focusing and when they are.
Yeah.
So was there any difference with him in typing, or would he be able? No, not at all.
No, not at all. He just continued right on, and that's why I at once unkindly thought that it might be a recording, a la Chinese opera. It was just astonishing that he would be rattling away at this speed, and not miss a moment. Not, you know, if you left out a bit of punctuation in your talk,
yeah,
he would spot it.
Really?
He was very, very alert, and he would speak quite coherently on the subject that you had called him about.
Yeah, so he was just able to completely bisect his
mind.
That's
right.
And just, and especially with the typing, it was just like a memory dump.
That's
just
correct.
Whatever came to
him. That's correct.
That's fascinating.
Yeah,
that's
no, insane. Isaac was one person that, well, like Jerry Andrus and a number of people that I know and have known in the past, they'll never make another one.
No.
That design is lost.
Yeah,
somewhere along the line, and maybe we're better off for it because we should work harder to get something else going for ourselves.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I'm sure we will have more stories about Mr. Asimov as the podcast continues. Let's just leave it here, and then we'll save one for another episode.
Glad to hear it.
All right,
good. Well, we'll do that.
Until next week, I'm Justin Robert Young, and this is James Randi.
I think so. Yeah, I've got that label inside my suit right here.
There we go. We'll see you guys next week on The Amazing Show.